This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. Glam icon Paris Hilton may be among the world's most photographed people, but there are two documents that most define her. The first was a sex tape, what we now call revenge porn, that emerged when she was just 19. But it propelled her from routine gossip column fodder to global notoriety. The second media artifact was a reality show that aired from 2003 to 2007 called The Simple Life, in which she appeared as a ditzy young socialite trying to cope with the real world in rural America.
I've always heard that people hang out at Walmart.
Why?
What is Walmart?
It's
like they sell wall stuff.
So spoiled and clueless. Yeah, no. Despite what the show depicted, Paris Hilton knew what Walmart is, and she was also familiar, all too familiar as it turns out, with such proletarian realities as mopping floors.
I feel like the whole world thinks they know me. No one really knows who I am.
That is Hilton herself in the documentary film This Is Paris on YouTube, establishing the premise which the film gradually, shockingly, turns upside down. Alexandra Dean, director of This Is Paris, could have made a film about Page Six fame, about glam culture and hypersexualization, about media manipulation. It could have been about adolescent trauma and PTSD. It could have been a redemption narrative or a business case about myth-making or an exposé. So she made all of them.
I think I made a psychological portrait. That's what I set out to do.
Psychological profile, you've also called it a love story in three acts.
Well, every act is structured around a search for love. Paris is a person who is lost, and she's looking for that emotional connection in the world. And she tries in the first act to find it from her fans. That's what I saw her doing when I followed her around the world for a year. And she doesn't manage that. And at the end of act one, you see why. And then the act two is really trying to go back to her family and reconnect with them and find the love relationship there. And she can't do that because of her past, which we start to unearth. And act three is really about turning that love narrative on its head and Paris actually finding some meaning outside of herself, showing some love for some people that have suffered similar trauma to see a path to freedom through that, looking outward.
I want to begin with the first part of the film that establishes that as a glam icon and entrepreneur, Paris Hilton leads an insanely grueling lifestyle at 275 days a year on the road. Another quickly established point is that she has a number of issues, including insomnia, for fear, we learn, of a recurring nightmare.
I'm in bed. And these two people come into my room. And say, do you want this to happen the easy way or the hard way?
And they brandish some handcuffs and she runs.
I'm trying to just run.
And that happens every night.
And in time, we'll understand what is the genesis of this anxiety. Paris has major trust issues. There is a scene where her new boyfriend is going to house sit for her or something while she's traveling. And as he's about to arrive, we see her setting up spy cams all over the house.
That just was happening when I showed up that day. She says, I want to know what's happening when I'm not here.
This is a woman, of course, one of whose previous boyfriends filmed and then released to the public a tape of an evening of sex.
She wasn't the only one. Pamela Anderson was first, but her sex tape came out at a time when very few people had ever had a sex tape be made public. It went viral, and it was a very traumatic experience.
That was a private moment with a teenage girl, not in her right headspace, but everyone was watching it and laughing like it's something funny.
And we, again, see some of the evidence of the trauma, her addictive personality, addicted in particular to drama, to attention, to control, and to money. Her goal, she says, is to make $1 billion, even if it means putting off motherhood indefinitely.
I will not stop until I make $1 billion. And then I think I can relax.
Driven, huh?
Driven to the point, I would argue, of pathology. We are in her jewelry closet and she's complaining about how she can't find anything. And I really push her and say, why do you need to keep going? You've got everything. You can't even find the jewels you have. And she admits that it's an issue of control. And then you realize, oh my God, this is a person who's trying to have control over her own life in a family where people are outsized personalities and, of course, outsized wealth. So in order to have that independence psychologically, she felt like she had to outdo even, I would argue, her great-grandfather, Conrad Hilton, you know, the man who started the Hilton hotel chain.
And at this stage, you're hardly disabused of what I think remains a common assumption on the public's part, that the sex tape was an intentional manipulation of a sex and scandal-hungry public to launch her as a mega celebrity. It's had that collateral benefit.
It did have a collateral benefit for Paris. I'm sure she will continue to be judged for that. At the same time, when you finish the film, you understand another level of trauma has taken place before the sex tape came out. And in fact, you find out that other women who went through the same trauma as Paris also went on to have abusive relationships and to be abused in much the same way she was by Rick Solomon. So I think another layer, I hope, of reframing happens by the end of the film when you cast your mind back to that section about the sex tape.
Okay, so now I think it's time to discuss the nub of the story. The provenance of that nightmare, which we know so haunts her, it goes back to when she was an out-of-control teenager acting out. We know her parents did not know what to do with her, and what they did was enroll her in a series of these sort of outward-bound type boot camps. Mm-hmm. To get her back on the rails.
These camps came out of a cult called Sayanan, and it was about using these harsh techniques, isolation, punishment, to get people over drug addictions. And that evolved into a way to deal with troubled teens over time. And the cult was shut down for its violent practices. But the troubled teen industry kind of never seemed to register that. So there's an entire industry today based around the philosophy of these cults that puts children in isolation, that uses physical intimidation, and I would argue abuse. It's now an accepted technique for dealing with children who have emotional or sexual problems.
And there's a whole mess of them in Utah for some reason.
Over 100.
It's a gulag archipelago of teen treatment, right?
Wow, yes.
How did she end up at this place called Provo Canyon School?
Paris was kidnapped from her own bed. It was a way of transporting teens that might try and run away to these schools.
And not uncommon.
It was very common. There's an entire industry around that. There are teams of men who come and take teenage children out of their beds in the middle of the night with their parents' sanction to these schools in handcuffs. It's incredibly traumatic. And every single one of the former troubled teens that I've discussed this with has the same recurring nightmare as Paris.
Am I correct that you think it was her traumas that really unleashed the tremendous will behind what has become the Paris Hilton we know?
Not entirely. she had a drive as a child that came out of these conversations with her grandmother, who wanted to be a star maker, right? Her mother and her aunt were both child actors and models. So there was this force in her life, in her grandmother, that was pushing her to be the next Marilyn Monroe, and Paris really responded to that. So that drive was there. The form it took was definitely shaped by this trauma and the pathology of her drive, which doesn't always follow reason, was shaped by that trauma, in my mind.
Oh, and she really got off on the fun, the attention.
Oh, yeah.
The endless love from total strangers.
Yes, there's a huge hit to it, right? We all get it when we just get somebody to like one of our little vacation photos on our cell phones. She gets it from hundreds of thousands of people, and she still has masses of fans around the world. And is she addicted to that sea of likes? Yes. Does it lead to a sort of a narcissistic trap? Yes. She is really trying to think about those things now. It doesn't mean she's free of them. It just means she's noticing that it is a kind of a sickness sometimes.
Everyone says I'm the original influencer. But sometimes I feel like I helped create a monster.
The reason I was so interested in this film is because I think so many of us now have to manufacture or feel like we have to manufacture a second identity online, and to some small extent have that second persona function as us out in the world. And what does that mean for all of us as we go out and try and have meaningful relationships? Of course, it trips us up sometimes. For Paris, it's catastrophic.
And taking on the role as a spokesman for this group of what they call themselves survivors of the Utah archipelago to redeem perhaps a life of superficiality?
People kind of lay at my feet that I may have set that up. But when I was trying to just, as a journalist, verify what she was telling me, she asked me to find her roommate, Jessica, because she remembered actually creating the Paris Hilton character with her. They had a name for her back in the day. She was called Fifi Ducoy, and she was this ridiculous, over-the-top, sparkly character. And Paris said to me, find Jessica. And so that's how actually we began going back and finding all of these survivors, but it was coming from Paris. And I will tell you something else. Since filming has ended, Paris has been very involved in talking to different senators about what they can do with breaking code silence, gathering this group of survivors she's already plugged into and making sure that their movement continues. So she's driving it still. So to me, that is really genuine.
Did you as a filmmaker know, like from the outset, that this story is much more complicated and Paris Hilton is, you know, even a victim?
The reason that I understood that this trauma was there in her and that there was a path to finding out is a strange one. And it has to do with my own sister, who was institutionalized as a kid, who was extremely beautiful, who was scandalous, and who was nearly broken by an institution that wasn't too different from Provo Canyon School, where Paris went. And I think that's part of what drew me to this film, because I saw that with my sister, these very powerful young women that are a little bit out of control. You know, they scare us on this level that almost doesn't make any sense. And I saw my sister be broken by this institution she went to. And I think Paris was broken in the same way. And I just wanted to look at that. Why do we do that? Is it because we want to save them and keep them pure, or we want to keep them safe? What is it? And are we breaking people who could be extraordinarily powerful if they were let to be who they are?
It occurs to me now that at the very beginning of the film, we hear her saying that she is astonished about her own transformation during the making of the film itself. Is it possible that it actually did begin as a sort of cynical, manipulative exercise of rebranding and turned out to be a transformational experience for Paris, having to relive the trauma and begin to get a grip on how it had informed her life?
Yeah, I mean, certainly that's what I saw. And you know what? It changed me too, because I went through a lot as a child. What I realized is she could never go to therapy because she had actually been abused by therapists at the school she went to. So therapy was part of her PTSD. And what I think you see in this film is a woman going through therapy. And the reason that she's able to do it with me is because I went through something similar as a kid. I think we're both kind of finding our way back to what happened to us and looking at a world where that happened and asking questions about it. I think what happens in this film is very unusual. And to me, it felt very real.
Well, I must say, I feel better about her as a figure in American 21st century history. But I didn't leave the film with any sense that she's going to be okay. Is Paris Hilton going to be okay?
Yeah, I didn't want to answer that for the viewer at the end of the film because I really didn't know. And I still don't know if she'll find the strength to leave the brand behind.
Well, you know what? You asked her that as a very direct question.
Can you and the brand have a divorce now?
No. It'll be an expensive divorce.
She has a lot of contracts, you know? She owes that brand a lot. It's a two-way street. I don't know what happens next. I will say I've been really impressed at her drive to keep this movement to close the schools. Her drive has only intensified since the film came out. And that, to me, is a sign that she may be okay.
Alex, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Alexandra Dean is the director of This Is Paris.
Coming up, reality shows are ludicrously fake, but that doesn't mean they can't be seriously educational.
This is On the Media.